Thank you. Thank you organizing for giving me the chance to talk at KITP. It's also my first time to talk at this conference, so I hope I do a good job and then I get invited again. Since 3 years ago, I'm a faculty member at Caltech. Before that, I was a postdoc with Ali at Princeton. And we are kind of now, we started a lab which does pretty much the scanning tunneling microscopy and transport measurements. Today I'm going to talk to you about our recent results on correlated twisted bilayer graphene. And as David said yesterday, supplementary information for this talk is given in this preprint. So we heard in yesterday and today about all these measurements in what insulating states and superconductivity in twisted bilayer graphene. And there is like a tremendous progress, mainly in transport measures, on one hand. On the other hand, if you look at various theoretical approaches, you can see that, there are various DFT calculations that we are going to hear tomorrow. There is an approach with the plane waves, which calculates the band structure and captures some correlations. But also, there are tight binding approaches. Basically, here is just a figure from Ashwin's paper, which kind of mimic the, let's say, more complex approaches to calculate the band structure, but keep the symmetries. And they actually faithfully reproduce some of these, let's say, ab initio models. And if you just look at the twisted bilayer graphene itself, you have two sheets of graphene. They form a Moiré lattice. We heard this many times already. And basically, in spatially, you will get a periodic triangular Moiré lattice. So you can try to look at the, let's say, spatial profiles of this system. Or if you're interested in the band structure, the hybridization between these two layers opens up a gap, and then basically by changing the twist angle, you can change this, let's say, bandwidth of this flat band that occur at the Manchester angle. So in what I tried to convey in these two slides, basically this system is actually very well suited for STM studies, because STM can give you some information both on the topography of the system, so it can give you some information of how you should think of this in spatial terms, but it can give you some basic information on the band structure and the gap values, and then you can try to answer some more exotic questions. What about correlations? What about superconductivity and magnetism? My group is not by far any close to being first of doing this. I mean, this twisted bilayer graphene is a topic, has a long history in STM community. So with some, let's say, first measurements back in 2009, where people measured, basically this is a twisted bilayer graphene on HOPG, so there's no gate tunability, but there was some onset of forming of Moiré patterns. As years progressed, samples became more and more sophisticated. So this is an example from Comi's group, where they measured, these are gate tunable samples, where they measured for a variety of angles. They measured Moiré patterns and also electronic properties. And this is one of the recent work from Emmanuel Tutuk and Ryan Leroy's group, where for the basically small twist angles, they found very interesting topological properties. And I have to stress also some even more recent results. This is a group from Beijing. They actually have a couple of papers close to magic angle where they actually see various features in magnetic field. This example is not gate tunable. And then there's a recent paper basically simultaneously submitted to the archive a few weeks before us, where they see some of the correlated physics that I will also talk about. And this is done at Columbia between Abe Pesupatu and Corey Dean. So one of the things that I will start the talk is just basic device fabrication. So, I mean, this is something that I think all in the community would like. If you have a twisted bilayer graphene, you would like that twisted bilayer to sit on the boronitride, and you would like to mimic transport experiment as much as possible so that you have some graphite gate which will reduce your disorder. And then you can approach with your metallic tip, and you can do scanning tunneling microscopy, and also tune the position of the Fermi level, the density of this, basically, the density of the electrons in the TBG. And we were basically set up to do exactly this, so to create such devices. One of the challenges, I mean, this part where you kind of stack and tear graphene with boronitride is kind of well established in transport measurement. One of the things that one has to solve in order to do STM is to flip this stack so that your twisted bilayer graphene is not capped by boronitride. And the method that we choose is we basically create this twisted bilayer graphene and we transfer it to another PDMS polymer and kind of release it from this PC, and then with this structure being flipped, you can actually place it back on a silicon oxide with the graphite backgate, which is already predefined there. And this is how the samples look like in the end. So here is your graphite backgate. Here is your boronitride, and you don't see it here, but I outlined the twisted bilayer graphene. So naturally, when you produce the samples, we heard this in other talks as well, you will have strain, you will have various regions, and I just kind of pulled this paper from Philip Kim's group and also from Corey Dean and Andrea Young, where they kind of verify that at, let's say, at large scales, you will actually have a lot of strain, and you can see different domains. Whether this is a curse or a blessing depends whether you are doing transport or STM. Because in STM, you know, this allows you to probe on one device, probe various angles in different areas. So here, to choose a few examples, this is like a 3-degree angle, 1.3, 0.97, 1.07. And in all the basically slides that I'll show later, the angle is actually calculated by the area of one Mourier unit cell. So basically, you can locally calculate the area which belongs here and then convert it to the angle. That's our measurement of the angle. So by no means these samples are really great STM samples. On a large scale, just to be completely honest, we see the reason why I'm not showing you this in a very large scale is because we have dirt. But also people in Columbia have dirt. So basically, this is a larger scale image where this is close to the magic angle. This is 50 nanometers. And you can see, you know, there is some dirt due to fabrication process. So the trick with this magic angle twisted bilayer graphene, as we read in various papers, you don't want to heat it because then there will lag to the AB stacking. So we are very cautious not to overheat the samples. And as a side product, all your dirt is sticking to your sample, so that's why you have all these things. And this is just an example from Columbia, where they're actually they wanted to reduce the fabrication even to the less extent that we did, and they actually leave the polymer underneath. So in their geometry, the polymer is underneath, so their sample should be kind of cleaner, but that the existence of this polymer limits you the backgate voltage range that you can access, because now your twisted bilayer graphene is much further through you from your backgate in this configuration than in the configuration that we are using. So now if you have this area, now you can choose different areas. You can start tuning the backgate and probe spectroscopy. And here one example This is from device one. We have a couple of devices that we measured so far. The area here is 1.92 degrees. Also, I want to kind of point out here that even though these three basically lines look approximately equal, they are not. So there could be some variations of about like 1 nanometer in one direction. And that tells you already that you have some kind of strain in your sample. So this is not magic angle. So now if you tune this with the Bagate, you can dope this system either on electron side or hole side, and you shift this Van Hoff singularity peaks. So basically, these are the peaks that that basically give you the onset of the what will become a flat band. And nothing super interesting happens here because as you shift with your Bagate the position of the Fermi level, these peaks just follow through. If you do the same experiment on a magic angles area, so this is now close to the magic angle. Yeah.
Can you show please?
Yeah.
So the super lattice gap is what? Where's the fully filled angle?
I'll come to that. We don't see it at these large angles. We see it at smaller angles, close to the magic value. And I actually have a couple of slides discussing this. Yeah. Here is the basically the magic angle value. For us, it's actually more natural to think in length scales than angles. So this would correspond to like 13 nanometers. That is roughly the magic angle, corresponds to the magic angle value. And you already see from this graph that something strange is happening. This is actually slightly lower angle, so 1.01 degree, but still correlations are pronounced. And the reason why I say this is because if you tune this slightly more electron doped or hole doped, you see this one peak kind of becoming prominent in comparison to the other peak.
So this is different gate voltages?
Yeah. This is. Oh, sorry, I didn't put them in. But this is different gate voltages. And I don't have it on this slide, but I would say it's like difference between these two is like 2 volts or so.
What's the separation between the gate voltages?
Yes. In the following slides, I'll cover this.
Is it possible to track the doping, the density?
Yes. And I will.
Have you changed from this left to the right? How much? Change in the density estimate?
I don't know the number by heart for this particular graph, but I'll get back to your question. So basically now, you can start applying voltages on your Bagate, and if you go all the way up to 10 volts, your starting point here, your bands will be fully filled, and they will be well below the Fermi level. So basically, what that means is that if this is your cartoon of the band structure, your Fermi level is deep into this dispersive bands, and onset of your flat bands, so the flat portions of the bands which you see here in the maximum of conductance, is some 50, 60 millivolts below the Fermi. And now you can change the Bagate voltage. And in this regime, as you change the Bagate voltage, your bands roughly move linear with the Bagate voltage setting. So that tells us that these bands, these dispersive bands, you know, to the very rough approximation, you can treat them as parabolic. So you have a constant density of states. So your change in density moves the shift the chemical potential in a linear fashion. So now, the next question is what happens when you reach this gap? When you reach this gap, basically you see a kink. So your bands shift much faster than they used to in this regime. And that tells us that basically you have you're entering the gap between the flat bands and the dispersive bands. And this value of the gap here, you can just read it off from this, is roughly 30 millielectron volts. And it kind of matches basically different calculations which predict similar types of gaps between the dispersive bands and in the flat bands. Okay.
Also so, transport. That's what
yeah.
It's measuring.
So now, I mean, we did this type of spectroscopy for many different angles that I showed you before. And you can actually map out how this gap value extracted from this basically scales with the gap, scales with the angle. And you get something like this. So between, let's say, a little bit less than 1 degree to 1.3 degree, we see some rough linear shift in a gap energy. So to be just precise, this is a gap between the upper dispersive band and the flat band. So this is on the electron side. So looking back in some DFT calculation, which take actually relaxation into effect, this type of dependence is not very surprising, as these kind of theory plots showed. As you go from smaller, let's say if you reduce the angle from 1.2 degrees to 1.05 to, let's say, 0.99 degrees, your gap is expected to be smaller and smaller. And then roughly at something, here they show the calculation 0.8. In our graph, if you want to be kind of extrapolate this to zero, this would be roughly at 0.8 degrees. Basically, the other bands would start touching this gap would be closed, and there would be a finite density of states here, just from the band structure calculations. This is also from the same paper. So we are kind of suspecting that we are on this part of the curve where we measure the band gap versus rotation angle as increasing here linearly. You can also see that the numbers are actually not matching. I mean, they're matching within a factor of 3 or 4. And we heard from Corey yesterday, that's a pretty acceptable factor in your theory. The experiment matched with the factor of 3.
So sorry, the calculation I don't remember is including relaxations or not?
Yes, this is including the relaxation. Yeah. I made this introduction because I will actually show some theory which, to match the experiment, I will have to scale for the factor of 15. So then this is a gentle introduction into this. Okay, so basically this is some first result of our work that basically we can map out this gap energy versus the angle. Now if you go lower, you start crossing, your flat bands start crossing the Fermi level, and now you see all kinds of things happen. I'm just gonna flash through the whole thing, but most prominent thing that you see here is that at charge neutrality, or roughly in the middle of this graph, these two basically bands kind of split, or something is kind of pushes them away, and then they kind of basically combine again, and you actually exit the flat bands at like roughly minus 10 volts. So one thing which we did on this particular device is we actually take this range, and you, based on the AFM measurements of your device, the electric constant of boron nitride and the thickness of the boron nitride, you can actually estimate capacitance. And if you do comparison to what is the back gate voltage range to cover this region, this basically corresponds to filling 8 electrons per Moiré unit cell. And we find this to be consistent within like 10%. This always works also for different angles. Meaningly, in this configuration, we kind of know what's the conversion factor between the back gate voltage and the density. So there was a question few slides ago, can we kind of say what the doping level is? From this graph, you can directly read it off. Somewhere here is charge neutrality, half filling is halfway between the onset of the bands, and so on.
Where are you actually doing the DIDV? Are you sitting on AA? Are you sitting?
Yes. Oh, so that's an extremely important question. So all this is on exactly on AA site. So it's on the top of the AA site. And in these measurements are highly dependent. If you're doing it on, like, if you miss it from a couple of nanometers, these things can change.
And do you see the dispersive bands ever in the DIDV?
We do.
AA, I guess.
So basically, we do. They are very kind of. The intensity is much smaller than the localized band, and this is actually not very good color scale for this. But you can see the bands onset of the bands here. I can actually show you more data later. But it's true that if you go on the AB side, these localized bands will be very much suppressed. The gaps, the dispersive part is strong, and also the gaps are more pronounced there. So the gaps, you can actually see it much better there.
So what temperature is this?
So this is all done at 1.5 Kelvin electron temperature. And when I say electron temperature, I mean like calibrated on the superconducting gap of lead.
Is there a way to estimate the magnitude of the displacement field? Breaks conversion?
Yes. The displacement fields are not too big. I can tell you that much because I would say they're similar to the results from Corey Dean and Andrea Young. The reason is that even though our tip is much closer, we are applying much less of a voltage. So it's, I would say they are comparable. They're not like extremely strong, so that I wouldn't expect too much of the effects of displacement fields. And we also tried to park the tip at various voltages and kind of various see what are the effects are. And the dominant effect, if you park at different voltages, if you move the tip up and down, is that this thing shifts up and down, meaningly your tip gates the sample locally, but it does not introduce too many like new features.
So I see the full black band and basically appear different bands. When you calculate the doping, you take account of the doping from the tip because there are different bands on it.
I'm not sure if I understood the question.
So like when you change the tip bands, right, you are also doping the graphene.
Yes.
So when you calculate how much you dope from the edge of the wavelength,
we can estimate this. Uh-huh. And actually, you can see it even here if you want to see it. So basically, this line here, we have data which have more pronounced these lines, tells you basically the coupling between the back gate and the tip. And this is actually something that changes when you move the tip closer, that the slope can change a little bit. And you can actually estimate how much you induce doping with the tip when you measure this measurement. But the point here is that, you know, whatever it is, it just shifts. If you shift the back gate for a different value, it will offset the contribution of the tip.
And the tip size is tens of nanometers.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Tens of nanometers. Yeah.
And am I reading off that the local gap, the gap at half filling, is around 20 MeV? Is that what?
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, roughly 15 to 20. I have a graph with different angles.
So you always see two parallel lines. What does these are two different flat bands?
These are basically correspond to flat bands here. Although I might have to find out singularities. Yeah.
I also figured, since that there's pretty pronounced asymmetry in your previous spectrum, looks something like a funnel line shape or something.
Yes. So here, this basically. As this approach the Fermi level or this one, it exactly so basically the lifetime broadening is basically reduced, and I will show some theoretical calculations which reproduce many of these features, let's say, but they don't exactly reproduce these things. So it's a little bit of an open question why this occurs, but like onto the first approximation, it's a lifetime broadening. The fact that if you place this far away from the Fermi level, you can kind of enhance broadening of the bands.
So just to make sure I understand this figure, if you do this for a larger angle, mm-hmm. you see that there's not much variation in the separation of runoffs as you go through that.
Yes, yes. So I actually have a backup slide on this, because there is a work from 2015 in Cromie's group for larger angles, and they did see larger separation at charge neutrality point. And they attribute that to like some tip-induced band bending. We think it's actually this tip-induced gating, because your two flat your two bands will be offset vertically also because of the tip. And then if you just look at the separation between them, it will be like larger, a little bit larger at the charge neutrality point. But that effect cannot explain this large separation that we observe here. So basically, yeah, so coming back to what Alan asked, so basically here is the line cut around charge neutrality. Here's the line cut close to the top of this graph here, where both bands are filled. And basically what you always see is that roughly this width is larger than this width for about 15 to 20 millielectrovolts. And we actually also map that as a function of an angle. And basically this separation is roughly, well, I'm not sure if it's constant, but kind of slowly evolves between, let's say, 1 degree and 1.3 degrees. And 15 millielectrovolts is here, so sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's a little bit less than 20.
So this is the separation between the red peaks?
Minus the blue peaks. So this separation minus this separation.
So what's the actual separation between the two poles?
The red peak, yeah.
So the reason why I'm not plotting that is that actually we saw a large variation from point to point in basically in this peak separation or this peak separation. So if you pull,
so from AA side to AA side or from different points.
So from AA site to AA site, you can see a large variation in this split.
A variation within the moray pattern.
In the moray pattern.
Not, I mean, not a random variation.
It's not a random. It's okay. So there are two types of variations. One is like if you are not on the AA site but you're a little bit off.
Yeah.
This will change. Mm-hmm. But also if you go from one site to the other site, this will also change. And it could be modified either by a local strain or the local environment. I mean, I have the graphs. They were just not that pretty. So, and this one is kind of more consistent.
So is this plotting the follow-up panel question? Yeah. Just make sure, is this plotting the separation between the red peaks?
This is a difference between, let's say, roughly full half at half max on this minus full half at half max here. And the reason why I chose this type of plot is that sometimes these two peaks, they are AA sites where these two peaks are actually kind of almost merged. It's hard to kind of separate them to say which one is which. But basically this width stays more or less constant or stays in some kind of a same.
But values. Typical values, 10 MeV or something?
Yeah, so here it's, okay, here it's more, yeah, this is like maybe 25, 30. 25, yeah.
But peak-to-peak is less, right? I mean,
the question is whether you take peak-to-peak, and I'm claiming that this kind of can vary much more than this value.
Oh, so that arrow is consistent. The peaks may, but...
Yeah, so
we don't have feeling of the...
So this peak, I mean, no matter what the mechanism is, these two variations, I mean, they can kind of merge together. You know, one peak can be larger than the other or vice versa. And then it will be more difficult to kind of say what the distance between the peaks. You have to kind of do some elaborate fitting and you know what to trust. But basically here, this one is more kind of more consistent.
So that one does not vary in position on the moray?
It does, but to much less this extent.
What is the error bar?
The error bars are big. The error bars are big. Basically, that captures the variation of
spatial variation.
Yes.
Actually, the separation between the poles is very large. It's 50 milliEV.
Yes, roughly. Yeah.
It's also seen in Columbia.
Yeah. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that separation has some fluctuations on the thing, and that basically this splitting, I mean, the difference between the splitting is kind of roughly constant, and that's what I would say. I would trust this number much more than the number quoted on any of, like, let's say, these things, because this can vary from point to point.
So just to be clear, okay, I'll ask you later.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, we can, I guess, one point just, of this okay. is to discuss.
So I just want to make sure I understood you. So when you said AA, you're measuring the local density of states on the A sublattice, let's say, at the top layer, right?
Yes.
And you're saying that if I go to an AA position within the Moray pattern...
You mean different AA site?
Different AA sites in the Moray pattern, you get different results different times.
You can get a slightly different result, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So what we kind of wanted to understand is, first, where this difference originates from, and how to think about this... difference between, let's say, fully occupied bands and the bands at charge neutrality. And actually, on this slide, I can actually point to two papers. They both involve Alan McDonald. So one is his recent work, where he actually calculated and predicted the gap at charge neutrality for twisted ballet graphene. And one is the little bit older work, where basically in graphene at high magnetic fields, if you position your Fermi level in between two split quantum Hall states, you will have enhanced splitting due to kind of quantum Hall ferromagnetism. So basically you can have some kind of exchange coupling happening at charge neutrality, which will split these bands apart where you have a Fermi level in between. And so we were started looking into kind of mechanisms with kind of this thing in mind. And the starting point for our theorist was actually Ashwin's model, Ashwin's 10-band model, where basically that one was is supposed to kind of mimic the twisted ballet graphene. And the idea was to kind of try to take this 10-band model and include short-range Coulomb interaction and see what's going to happen. And if you just look at Ashwin's model, his bandwidths are of the order of a couple of millielectron volts. So this is where I need the factor of 15 to match with the experiment. But I think you can make more sophisticated model if you just tune the parameters of this model, because the model has, I think, 10 parameters or so, which are all some energy scales, and you know, you can probably create everything from this by tuning this parameter. So we didn't
stick to match Cushino at all, the relaxed band structure bandwidth. So if you want to change, if you experimentally find a bigger bandwidth, then you just fit it to that.
Yeah, so the question is, like, you know, we didn't try that, but probably in the future we will. I mean, the question is what parameters make sense to change on this? Is it like copying or so? Because this is something that kind of needs to be discussed and considered. But basically what we kind of wanted to reproduce is just general phenomenology by kind of adding this 10-band model and short-range Coulomb interaction. And I will list the theorist in the end, but basically Alex Thompson and Yang Peng basically, if they add this Coulomb interaction, they can reproduce this splitting near charge neutrality point. So this is a simple model, the simplest model that you can imagine. So there's no there's no broken symmetries between the valleys and the spins. You are just taking in a language of flavors, it's a single flavor model. And you can change the filling factor between minus 1 and 1, which would kind of correspond to experimental value of, like, the scale that I showed you, 8 electrons per Moiré site. And the model actually reproduces both, let's say, enhanced splitting of the bands and also, like, widening of the bands at the charge neutrality point.
Yes? Question. Is there any difference with the impedance?
There is very mild difference, originally predominantly from gating. Basically, you shift all the positions down. And one of the outcomes, yeah, sorry.
Do you ever see this peak split?
Sorry?
So the peak splits in two, each one of the peaks, right? And that's understand the effect of the correlation.
Yes.
Do you ever see it in your data?
You mean this?
Right.
So, what mean? You know, it's hard to say. if this is a second peak here, or this is just broadening. So I mean, it definitely not pronounced splitting like here. But I'm pretty sure. I mean, this is zero temperature. If you broaden this by any means, this would.
So, what is your resolution? Let's let you. What would be the minimum splitting that you could resolve in your SPL?
Well, it would help if it's 10 millielectrovolts. I mean, if it's like a couple of millielectrovolts, I'll show some results at half filling where you can resolve a gap at like two to four millielectrovolts. It really depends on how high are these peaks and what you are picking up with STM. So I wouldn't, like, imagine if this peak is slightly lower, I mean, you will not see this as a two peaks. So they have to be kind of like basically relatively same height that you observe. This is a gap.
Just to say, I think there is evidence of that feature in Albright's data. I think there is evidence of that splitting in Albright's data.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that there's evidence in our data as well. But the question is, you know, like
it's slightly more suggestive than your data.
Okay. I mean, we have more data, which is like, you know. Yeah, okay.
Not your research, but I think it's relevant.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically here, one of the caveats of this particular solution to this thing is that actually it breaks the C3 symmetry. So this solution is lower than the fully symmetric solution where basically in a fully symmetric, if you impose your system to have a fully symmetric solution, it doesn't break C3 symmetry, you actually do not get this splitting. And meaningly, like from theory, you are kind of set to expect the C3 symmetry breaking just by solving this Hamiltonian with a short range Coulomb interaction.
You're talking about the
neutrality. Yes.
Everywhere?
No. So not everywhere. So here, this is charge neutrality. This is the Brillouin zone. And then you can see that already in this model, which is only a single flavor, so it doesn't take into account anything about spins and valleys, this C3 symmetry breaking is expected to be a charge neutrality and kind of already at half filling is not pronounced. Meaningly, if you resolve this triangle, white triangle here, you can see that it's recovered at like half filling. So it's really around charge neutrality. I would say from theory, you would expect it to be plus minus one quarter of charge filling. Yeah.
What kind of interactions do they have? It's just an on-site?
It's shorter. Yeah, it's on-site column, yes.
And that is enough to break the C3?
Yes.
It spontaneously breaks it.
Yes. So okay. So there are various solutions. I have to kind of clarify this. So basically, there are let's say in the theory, you can get the C3 symmetry breaking. You can get C2T symmetry breaking. C2T symmetry breaking will result in a gap. I mean, all of this is in kind of supplementary information on the paper. The C2T symmetry breaking, which creates a gap, actually produces plots which do not really match the experiment that well because it actually expects discontinuity at the charge neutrality point when you jump from one flat band to another flat band. As opposed to this solution, which actually kind of has some small density of states at the charge neutrality point so that the evolution of these is kind of continuous. And this is something also that kind of is consistent with the transport data, at least the transport data that was measured so far, where they don't observe hard gap at charge neutrality. But in theory, you can get a charge, you can get a gap as well. And then you can do different things. You can do spontaneous breaking of the symmetry or explicit broken symmetry. I believe in some parameters regime you can even get this from, let's say, spontaneously broken symmetries. But I think this one is actually explicitly broken with some small parameter.
Sorry. Yeah. In your data, you use symmetry breaking.
I'll come to that. Oh. In last 5 minutes or so, or four.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. So basically, within this model, what Yang Peng actually calculated, he calculated that, in a 10-band model, you typically get density of states on the AA side, but he also figured out a way how to calculate basically density of states in this in-between domain walls. And the resulting thing from here is that if you are close to Van't Hoff singularities, which are given by these values, because this is an unscaled model, you would see that in these domains walls, you could see some kind of traces of broken C3 symmetry. And yes, in the data, you see broken C3 symmetry. You see also kind of some charge disorder. But basically, the idea here is that these domain walls, which are kind of connecting these AA points, they are very different if you're at one Van't Hoff singularity or close to another Van't Hoff singularity. And I actually have a very well-suited movie. This is kind of a must if you're doing STM now. So watch carefully, because the movie is really fast. But I can do it again. So basically, this is a black point, which is in the middle and shows you the spectrum. The red line shows you the trace over the whole range. And let me try again. So you can see how this lights up and kind of goes away. But let me show you a few cuts. So basically here, it's not super visible, but basically you have this arm's more pronounced than this arm. And in the beginning, I'll have to show it again. I missed it a little bit, but you have this arm, which is, I mean, basically this domain wall, which is more pronounced. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little about the statistics of that? Because there's obviously a lot of spatial disorder. The actual system does not have a microscopic C3 symmetry, so how can you say whether it's broken? Is there any sort of quantitative measure that you undertook?
Not beyond just showing this kind of spatial maps. But one thing which you can do, and I think we have the data, is, you know, you can quantify, it's basically a little bit reproducing this type of measurements, where, I mean, here everything is universal, but the idea here is that if you measure the density of states in between at the domain walls, you can actually calculate some average values. And the point here is that just from this movie that I show you, these average values for three different directions of domain walls will change as a function of energy.
Okay, so if I were to add up like midpoints at 90 degrees versus midpoints at 210 degrees, whatever, then I would eventually come up with some sort of an order parameter.
Yes.
For this. Okay.
Yes. That's why it's hard to say anything about like charge neutrality, because the disorder is most pronounced at charge neutrality. But we are saying that at close to the Van't Hoff singularity, the disorder is a little bit less. But you still have some change of the.
We cannot do a Fourier transform because of the limited range.
Or yeah, it's a very small range. So you need a little bit bigger lattice to.
Sorry, I don't know if you have said that, and I have missed it. But in the theoretical result that you have broadening or as well splitting Van't Hoff when you are at the charge neutrality point, But then, when you are at an S equal 1, they are again closer.
Yes.
So do you observe this change over there?
Yeah. I mean...
No, I'm not saying...
This is the...
No, but I'm not saying when you are out of the flat band. That one, you are
at
NF equal.
No. Here at, so you mean like this?
The flat, NF is when you are completely out of the.
When you're completely out, you're here.
Okay, sorry.
But here, I mean, this I'm going the wrong direction. Basically, here, you actually see that these bands get closer much sooner than the, I mean, you're still in the flat band.
I think we'll have to defer the. Further discussion to lunchtime, because we have only one talk between us and lunch.
So the last slide, we also see, if you go from charge neutrality and you go to, like, say, half filling, both for electrons and holes, we do see a gap, which would correspond to, let's say, correlated insulating phases at, for electrons and holes. And furthermore, if you take the back gate trace, basically, which tells you the density of states at zero voltage, if you take this charge neutrality, it could be roughly here. This is your full filling. So these points would correspond to like a local minima in the density of states, basically indicating that whatever it happens at the half filling that you would expect, the correlated states to occur. And I will skip the summary, but these are the people who actually did the work, and the theory groups are from Jason Lissell, Felix von Open, and Bill Lefebvre. Thank you for your attention.